The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
I'm joined in studio by Pulitzer Prize winning poet and Ireland Chair of Poetry, the man responsible for Muldoon's Picnic, Paul Muldoon. Good morning and welcome.
Thank you so much. It's a thrill to be here. I'm not sure if I'm entirely responsible for Muldoon's Picnic. It goes back, believe it or not, to in or around 1874.
1874. What was the original Muldoon's Picnic?
You know,
then?
That was, I'm so glad you asked, that was a show that derived, it was related to the song Muldoon the Solid Man, which is a song that has a certain currency in this country. And it's a song that was written by Ed Harrigan and Tony Hart. And it was used, I think, initially in a sketch called Who Owns the Clothes Line? And that was set in a tenement in somewhere in the Lower East Side in New York, and you know, featured a bunch of what I think we'll have to call stage Irishmen. But anyway, out of that grew this great, I suppose, variety show would be the best way of describing it. It must have been something like Sunday Night at the London Palladium.
With an old-time variety show with jugglers and hypnotists and singers and dancers and all the rest.
And the Lord knows what. That's right. And variety is the key to what we do with it these days. We've taken on that template, and about 10 years ago I started doing a version of it in the Irish Arts Centre in New York. And over the years we've been here, this is our fourth trip under the auspices of Poetry Ireland, our fourth tour round Ireland itself.
It sounds like Muldoon's Picnic was almost the template for the Sgt. Pepper album.
You know, I don't think it's a million miles removed.
For the benefit of Mr. Kite.
That's right. It stems from the same tradition. That album, I think, derives partly from the music hall tradition. And of course, Lennon, McCartney, and probably the rest of the Beatles too, were influenced by that. I'm sure there was still an element of that happening in Liverpool. And indeed, there would have been an element of that probably on radio. Television was really, you know, not necessarily so much to the fore in their minds, but I think there was radio variety.
It's funny that things that can appear exotic. For example, we know Tipperary. We know what it's like, be it the North Riding or the South Riding. We know what Tipperary is like. When you hear, back in the day, the Soviet Army Choir singing It's a Long Way to Tipperary, for them, that must be incredibly exotic. And in the same way with the Beatles, Penny Lane. What could that be? Strawberry Fields. What could they be? They're place names.
They're place names, but you know, like many artists of all stripes, poets certainly, the Beatles as songwriters were trying to make sense of themselves in their place. One of the ways we do that is to understand where we're from. And so those very localized songs, the song titles, are just indicative of, you know, the extent to which they fall in to a pattern that's very common among artists. You know, in this country, we have Kavanagh's Monaghan, for example. It in a strange way, it didn't exist before Kavanagh. Joyce's Dublin, and in a strange way, and this is to take a, I'm sort of twisting somewhat a phrase from our friend Oscar Wilde, Liverpool didn't quite exist until the Beatles.
Until the Beatles. It's funny, I mentioned Penny Lane and Strawberry Fields, but even characters like Lovely Rita, Meter Maid, I mean, we can imagine, we didn't have Meter Maids in Dublin, I don't think. But still, we saw them in, you know, popular culture, our view of England, for example. We know there were Lovely Rita, Meter Maids.
That's right. I mean, what's fascinating about that is we don't have Meter Maids. We probably wouldn't be allowed to call them Meter Maids anymore, in any case. But I must say, this may sound really strange, but I never walk past a parking meter without thinking of Lovely Rita, which means that my mind is, you know, it's difficult for me to walk down the street.
You wonder what the Americans, who, of course, fated the Beatles, what they made of some of the things. I mean, I heard on your podcast Sir Paul talking about, you know, selling poppies on a tray. They didn't understand the poppy, November, Armistice Day and all of that. They thought it was puppies, doggies, little doggies on a tray.
That's right. But you know what? I think we've all had that experience of hearing, and indeed not only hearing, but maybe even loving songs that we don't quite understand. I mean, the lyrics of many songs are hard to make out, and yet we can have a relationship with them. So paradoxical though it may seem, we may love what we don't quite understand. I wouldn't recommend it as a way of going through life, but it does happen. So the Beatles, of course, you know, that was one component in the song, but they there were other things that people were, you know, were attracted to and latching onto.
Now, your conversations with Sir Paul, which gave rise to a book, but how did you and he discover each other?
Well, that started, it's again a long story, it goes not, I won't trouble you with the entire story, it goes back to a night in the opera. A fellow called Bob Weil and myself went to see Don Carlos one night at the Met, and he had edited a book of Paul McCartney's poems, Blackbird Singing. And he was talking to me that night about the possibility of his doing a book of the lyrics. And he'd already asked me over the years if I would do actually another book with him. I'd already done a version of The Wasteland, an introduction to The Wasteland for Liverite, who were the original publishers of The Wasteland. So I kind of took it that he was asking me if I might get involved in this. And by the end of the night, this is one of these interminable operas. It is five acts or something, therefore four intermissions. So by the end of the night, though, the thought that I might be involved in it happened. So I was introduced then to Paul McCartney, and we got on pretty well. And so that started a five-year process whereby we met, oh, five or six times a year. I think we met 25 times all told, usually in person, then in the COVID era by Zoom. And we recorded his responses, the background to these 154 lyrics that he'd written or for, in which he was...
His recall seems to be precise.
You know, it was something that we set out each time we sat down to try to come up with something that he hadn't quite said before. You know, when one's been interviewed as often as Paul McCartney, one has tended to tell the same stories. So we quite educatedly set about not making up stuff, yeah, but coming up with something new. So in any case, these conversations were transcribed for the purpose of this book. And I am absolutely certain, had no idea that they would ever see the light of day, or whatever the phrase is, that no one would ever hear them. I mean, they were mic'd very loosely.
Yeah.
And
I mean, they're very casual in their nature.
Very casual. And in fact, as I say, had we known that these recordings would ever be aired, I think we would probably have had a much more formal relationship.
But less interesting, maybe.
Probably. I mean, that's what people seem to like about them, is the slightly unbuttoned aspect. Mm. And some of it is actually probably rather unbuttoned. Yeah. And some of it is technically really not fit for broadcast at all. But nowadays, as you know, such is the technology that they can really enhance these recordings. So it was a surprise, I think, to both of us that the podcast as a phenomenon arose at all.
But it's there, and it's available on Spotify and all over the place. And it's called McCartney...
A Life in Lyrics.
A Life in Lyrics, a very good title. You're mixing with rather the best people these days, are you not? You were consorting with Queen Camilla.
Well, that's partly because of my role as Ireland Professor of Poetry, which is a rather grand title. It's a position that's been in place for a few years now. I actually am the ninth Ireland Professor of Poetry. And it's a job that involves being in residence in one of three universities, Queen's University Belfast, where I was last year for the spring semester, or quite a bit of it, Trinity College Dublin, where I am this year, and next year, if all goes well, UCD. So I give a lecture in two of those three institutions, and then I teach some classes. I'm running a little seminar, actually a large seminar called How to Read a Poem, which brings in a lot of people. But in any case, it was partly through that, I think, that I was asked if I would put together a program for what's known as the Queen's Reading Room, which was held the other day at Hillsborough Castle I started off actually with a version of An Lán Dubh Báire, the great poem by Seamus Dáil MacCurtha, and then we went to a poem by James Orr and Ulster Scots, and right the way down to the present era. The Queen's Reading Room was the aegis under which this event had happened, and she was indeed there. I must say, I do admire the fact that she's rather what I suppose in some intellections would be perceived as quite outspoken about various matters, including censorship. So the fact that she bothers to do that is impressive to me, and it's one of the reasons why I was involved in it, frankly.
Now, before we conclude, I have to ask you what is in store at Muldoon's Picnic in its various locations. It starts on the 13th of May in the Town Hall Theatre in Dublin. It moves on to the Marketplace Theatre in Armagh on the 15th of May, Thursday the 16th in the Wexford Arts Centre. And on the final night will be Friday the 17th of May, Pavilion Theatre in Dunleary. And you've got a band of rogues accompanying you.
Well, that's right. I work with a band called Rogue Oliphant, which is a play, of course, on the rogue elephant, and somehow is related to it's actually predominantly a Scottish name, Oliphant, probably relating to someone who was in the ivory trade at one point. But this is a collective of musicians that I work with, all of them quite distinguished, some of them slightly better known than others. Cathal Reardon of the Pogues plays bass in it, for example. David Mansfield, who was out with Bob Dylan on the Rolling Thunder Review, is in it. So they're it's a fabulous band. So they're the house band, as it were. But then on each occasion, we're joined by, you know, some of the really most interesting Irish artists of the moment, be they prose fiction writers, poets, singer-songwriters, musicians.
All to look forward to. I suspect you might have people travelling around with you to see all of the four events of Muldoon's Picnic.
Well, let's hope so. I mean, the tickets are on sale, and I have a feeling they might go quite quickly, so I would urge people to get out there and get themselves a seat or two.
And if they check out poetryireland.ie, they will find all details and booking arrangements and so on. Paul Muldoon, always a pleasure to have you in studio. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.